This is Dean Johnson. Well, our experiment has hit a little bit of a glitch, but we're back now. As I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted, tonight we're going to be talking about coronavirus injustice, how the coronavirus has affected the law, has affected our institutions, has affected our courts, and how it's affected you. And as always, we welcome your calls, but particularly we want to hear from you tonight because we know that every one of us is sharing this experience. Every one of us has been impacted personally. We can't talk about all of the changes that have been made to the law in the last few weeks as a result of this cloud that's come over us. And we can't give specific legal advice, but we're going to do our best to answer your questions. Our call-in number tonight, if you're inside the Bay Area, is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Outside the Bay Area, 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. Tonight, we are most fortunate to have as our guest James Bostwick. Jim is one of America's outstanding trial lawyers. Jim has practiced in San Francisco for over 40 years. He's a partner in the firm of Bostwick and Peterson LLP, which is located in Mill Valley. Jim represents people who have suffered serious injuries and who are seeking damages in the courts, and he has done so very successfully. He holds numerous record verdicts and settlements for his clients, including the largest malpractice verdict in U.S. history, the largest mild traumatic brain injury verdict in San Francisco history, and the largest medical malpractice settlement in the history of the state of California. Jim is a member of the Inner Circle of Advocates, which is limited to the top 100 plaintiff's lawyers in the United States. He's a past president of the International Academy of Trial Lawyers, and he is also the author of the best-selling legal thriller Acts of Omission, which was just nominated for the prestigious 2020 Harper Lee Legal Fiction Award. The first edition of Acts of Omission has been sold out, but it's available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible. And the paperback is going to be released June 9th and is available for pre-order on Amazon. Most importantly for our discussion tonight, Jim is a member of a group of national leaders of the profession of law, who are working with the courts across the nation to help the courts deal with the coronavirus pandemic. Jim, thanks for being with us tonight.
Good evening. I hope you all can hear me better than I can hear Dean. Sorry about all our technical glitches that came on. I guess that's a part of our new situation where we all have to work together remotely.
Well, you know, we're all adjusting to this new reality. You know, Jim, those of us who deal with the court system every day have some idea of how coronavirus has affected the judicial system, but our listeners may not. Could you just give us an overview of what's been happening with the courts since CV-19 struck?
Well, basically not even our world at war has had such a profound impact on the system of justice in America. It's really quite stunning what's going on. All the federal courts, from the local districts all the way to the Supreme Court, have essentially stopped work on pending cases. The state court system has stopped hearing all but, quote, essential, unquote, cases, and those are being heard by phone when that can be arranged. Criminal cases are in limbo. The constitutional right to a speedy trial can't be accomplished without placing participants at risk. Civil cases are postponed for indefinitely, periods of time that are different in every county. When and if this changes and we start to get back to normal, the backlog could be extraordinary. It could be extreme. one of the problems is there's tremendous inconsistency within the state. Each county is trying to deal with this problem, and they're each going their own way depending on the thoughts of the local judges. Essentially, for many people who need the justice system and for society, justice has ground to a halt. Litigants can't move forward. Lawyers can't even contact the court to find out whether their case is moving forward or can be heard. One of the problems we have is we can't really even predict how long this is going to last. Because although we all want to say, well, as soon as the curve flattens and as soon as there aren't new cases, then things can get back to normal, right? But I'm not sure that's really true, and I'm afraid the experts are saying that we won't know who is going to still be at risk. We won't know whether or not those that have had the disease and done well, whether they really are immune or not. We don't know whether we'll have enough tests to determine who can safely go out in public. Are we going to have a vaccine? Is it going to be effective? These are the basic questions that none of us can really answer. And of course, the concern of the experts and the concern of the courts and the lawyers, the officers of the court, is how long is this going to be in place, and what will the American system of justice be like when it's over? It may never be the same.
Those are just the questions we want to talk about. I mean, you make a very good point. Essentially, the lawyers who would be litigating cases right now are on an enforced vacation. I know my wife, who's a criminal defense attorney, has stayed home, and she's gotten notices from the court that trials are delayed for at least 60 days. 60 days from now, those cases aren't going to go away, and the new cases aren't going to go away, so everybody's going to be doing double duty, and the courts were overcrowded in the first place, right?
Dean, if you're talking, I can't hear you. And that's, of course, what we're going to be facing in the courts. We all may have to deal with justice remotely, and if something like this happens, how are we going to protect the rights of the American public?
Well, I think that's one of the huge questions. I think we're illustrating right now that remotely dealing with communication is very difficult. And as you and I both know, in-person communication is a lot different from communication over a computer or a cell phone. So how is our justice system going to get by?
Well, how is the system going to, what is going to happen? Well, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to find a way to deal with the courts remotely. We are going to have to find a way for the judges to interact with each of the lawyers and the litigants the way we are right now. Unfortunately, during the process, we're going to maybe have the same problems that we're having right now. I've used the Zoom system many, many, many times in the course of my practice, and this is the first time that the Zoom system has simply cut out in the middle of the start of the conference.
Imagine using Zoom for a trial where you have 12 jurors and a couple of alternates, defendants, plaintiff, lawyers, judges. They're all trying to do a trial, and something like this happens in the middle of your cross examination. That could be a disaster, no?
If I can't tell if you're talking anymore, Dean, but yes, if this happens, then a case grinds to halt. We have litigants that, let's say that we have a family that has waited for years, as you do in our system, to have a case prepared to get ready for trial. You've been waiting for that trial date for 2 or 3 years, and you finally have your trial date, and you have a right to a trial by jury under the American system. When we get to the court, right now, all of those people that had a trial set have lost that trial date, their trial date. The courts have ended all jury trials except in a few criminal cases. That means, and some courts have said, well, we're going to move back the trials 3 months, all of the trials, so they're all in the same order. Other courts have just canceled the trials that were set, and when we go back to the court, there's going to be a huge backlog, and the wave is going to swamp the court. When we do get to the court, how are we going to be able to have a hearing unless we all do it remotely? The judges will be remote. The lawyers will be remote. And are we going to have a jury that all is separate, sitting in different rooms, watching what's going on television? If that's the way that we can have a jury trial, let's say this summer, that's not going to be the same jury trial system that we all have come to love and respect in this country. Juries are where people in the community all come together, and they come from different walks of life, and they all say to each other, okay, this is my common sense idea about what we've heard, and they hear what other people's common sense idea is about.
If you'd like to make and try again, if you need help, hang up and then dial your operator. If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try
there.
If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
Jim, you still with us?
Hello.
Hi, Jim. Are you still with us?
I'm still here, but I just had somebody come on and say, if you still need help, hang up and dial your operator.
I know. Well, this is becoming technically interesting. You know, you talk about trial. I know you do primarily civil trials, but in the criminal area, we have a thing called the right to speedy trial, which is guaranteed by the Constitution. And what happens if you don't get a speedy trial is that your case gets dismissed after a certain period of time. I mean, we could actually see people who are arguably at least guilty of very serious crimes walking out the door just because there's no courtroom available to take them to trial. Yes?
Well, if I were a defendant, normally it seems to me that I would want to waive the right to a speedy trial under normal circumstances because I'd like to delay the process. Right now, I suspect some defendants may say, no, I won't waive my right to a speedy trial, and then what are the courts going to do if they can't convene and provide a jury, which is a constitutional right under the law?
Yeah,
you're a criminal lawyer, I'm a civil lawyer, but I don't know what in the world the courts are going to do then.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happens and what's beginning to happen. The other thing that's happening is even before we get to trial, there are people who are in custody awaiting trial. And as you might imagine, being in jail is just asking for exposure to a virus. Jails are communal areas where people can't social distance. And so lawyers had started making motions to have their clients released on bail We just got a little breaking news before we came on the air that San Mateo County has now set the bail for most cases, other than some serious or violent felonies, at zero. So it looks like a lot of people are going to be emptying out of the jails.
I don't know whether you stopped talking or I've lost you, but...
Okay, I've stopped talking. And there are a lot of problems that come up even before trial, yes? I mean, as civil lawyers and criminal lawyers alike need to go to the clerk's office. We need to have the court intervene when we have a dispute among the lawyers. And even the clerk's offices have now shut down, yes?
No, it's an insoluble situation in many ways, although the courts are trying valiantly to deal with it, and lawyers are trying to get together to figure out how to deal with it as well. But in this present situation, how are the judges going to set a reasonable bail? Well, the Supreme Court has told us that actually, unless there's a serious felony, they're not to set a bail. They have zero bail. We have the problem, as you've alluded to, with the defendant that has to go into jail is going into a situation where it is almost impossible for them to be socially isolated. And that is going to create a serious risk that has not been contemplated in our correction system. The courts have to decide how to deal with that as well. Some kinds of offenders are probably going to have to be let go. Other kinds of offenders are going to be subject to much higher risk. Then the courts have to decide what to do with people that are at a particular risk of developing the virus.
Yeah, and we had a call from Jeff in Palo Alto who was wondering if we were going to see mass dismissals of criminal cases. Jeff, you know, we're not at that point yet.
Hello? Yeah, it was not really criminal cases, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, Jeff, good to hear from you. I'm glad we were able to get through with the technology we're using.
Hold on just a second. You can see the difficulties you're having. Imagine what's going to happen with the courts. I mean, it's going to be absurd. My suggestion was this. I don't know why the state judicial council couldn't just say, look, we're going to ask the courts to dismiss all minor, non-violent matters. You know, I mean, I'm not so much interested in criminal issues, although that could be considered. I'm talking about civil issues. I mean, you know, people who have vehicle code violations, but they're minor, nonviolent, whatever. We can't deal with this. We have to dismiss them. And then secondly, if you're going to put somebody in jail, I think you already alluded to this, you're going to be risking people's lives by putting them in jail. So that's a huge problem.
Well, yeah, I have to agree with you, Jeff. You know, the whole equation of reasonable bail changes. Because now you take people and put them in jail where they have communal dining rooms, communal toilets. They're 24/7 in small cells with several people. I mean, and you've got people moving in and out of there on an hour by hour and minute by minute basis. You are just asking for exposure. In Santa Clara, there have already been several inmates in the jail and at least seven deputies who work in the jail who have been exposed to coronavirus, and yet people stay in custody. And you've got to wonder whether at some point is that not some sort of cruel and unusual punishment. And the answer that's coming back from the courts now is, yeah, maybe that's true, because, as I said, now in San Mateo County, except for people who've committed a certain list of serious and violent felonies, bail is zero, so people walk out of the jail. So, Jeff, you make a very good point. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you, and
we're going to go to a station break for a moment, and we'll be back with your legal rights.
Dean, are you talking?
I am not talking right now.
Well, I suppose we ought to talk about what happens right now. What if a person out there that's listening has a letter from the court saying that they've been called to jury duty?
Okay, that's a good question. You want that one? All right.
What are they supposed to do? Well, all civil cases, if you're called to a civil case, all civil cases have been canceled. There are no civil jury trials going on in virtually every county in the state, if not all. So that is not an issue. But if you were called to a criminal case, I suspect that is not going to happen, but you do need to call and see if you can get through to someone. The problems we have is that even the lawyers can't get through to any clerks and to find out what is going on with their cases and if things that are on calendar are actually happening. If you get through to someone, you're probably going to find you do not have to go in. If you can't get through, then I think you're just fine not showing up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't see a judge holding somebody in contempt for not showing up for jury duty right now. Yeah. Okay.
The problems we're having, of course, as I've mentioned, is that I can't hear anything you say, Dean. Most of the time, so I don't know if you've asked me a question.
You're doing great, and we are live, and we have Benjamin from San Francisco.
I didn't hear that. Maybe what we should talk about is on the civil side with...
A little background on jury duty.
What am I in your ear and listen to what he's saying so you can hear him?
As we were saying, you know, most jury trials are continued. They're put off now for 60 days. Even criminal trials are put off, but that varies from county to county. And it may be that some cases where speedy trial times are about to run out will actually go to trial. How we're going to do that, we don't know. But if you get a notice for jury duty, the best thing to do is check in with the court. Of course, that creates a problem because the court staff is, in many cases, not there.
I just heard you finish something. Could you ask that again?
Yeah, we're talking about jury duty. Usually when you get a notice for jury duty, if you don't show up, then you get another notice from the court that says, come on in and explain why you didn't do that and why you shouldn't be fined. But that's not likely to happen now, do you think?
No, I don't think that's going to happen at all. I think under the circumstances, nobody is going to be held to any kind of a serious violation.
Okay, we seem to be having some insurmountable technical issues right now. We're going to reconnect with the gentleman of Your Legal Rights in just a moment. Stay with us here on KALW. Thank you. You're listening to Your Legal Rights here on Local Public Radio in the brave new world of coronavirus broadcasting. Support for KLW is provided still, believe it or not, and we hope they still do, from the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. We reconnect you now with the gentleman of Your Legal Rights, hopefully with a little bit of a better connection.
Hi, and this is Dean Johnson, and we're back on Your Legal Rights. Jim, are you with us now?
Yes, I am, and it's really nice to hear your voice, Dean.
Jim, it's so nice to hear you. You know, we were talking about jurors and jury service. So we should make it clear that we're not telling anybody who gets a notice for jury service just to ignore it. It might be a good idea to call in and see if you happen to be assigned to one of those trials that's actually going.
Yeah.
But I'd like to move on now. I know you have been, recently as today, you've been talking with some of the other outstanding lawyers across the country about the very issues that we're talking about now. What are we going to do about this? This strikes me as possibly the biggest legal can of worms that the country has ever seen. Have you gotten an outline or an idea of how the courts are going to solve this? What are the top lawyers recommending?
Well, all of the lawyers feel that they need to do everything they can to help the court deal with this problem, and to try to do it in a cohesive and consistent way. One of the problems we've had thus far is that what we're doing in California is not being done in other parts of the country. I practice in Hawaii, and they're doing entirely different things than we're doing in California. There should be some consistency, and I think that the national bar can help the courts maybe find a way to orient that way. The most important thing, I think, is to encourage the court to set up a remote system so that they can actually, you know, deal with the lawyers, move things along, and get cases to actually start being processed. The major areas in the civil, bailiwick are cases where you have businesses that are having disputes and you have large sums of money at issue, or you have people that have been injured and they have terrible ongoing problems. With that happening, with those kinds of cases, the problem is that the court has to find a way to move them. if we just simply take those cases off calendar and then they have to wait to come on later, people that have been waiting for years may not be able to get their case heard for another 2 years. Some mother who is taking care of a brain-damaged child or a brain-damaged or a wife who's taking care of a brain-damaged husband and who's been working 24/7 for years hoping that she will get some resolution from the people who she contends caused this, if she has to wait another 2 years, she may not be able to manage. She may not be able to cope. Those people need to have resolution. Now, you would think in the middle of a situation like this that there would be an opportunity for people to come together and just simply mediate their issues. Why can't the defense and the plaintiffs get together and solve their problems and settle the case? It's a good opportunity for that. Well, one of the major problems in that is that the people who may have to pay, the companies or the insurance carriers, may not be that anxious to put out their money unless they have to. With a trial date, they have to be sensible and they have to decide whether they want to resolve the case. Without a trial date, that may be much harder. What we're trying to do is find a way to help the courts set up some guidelines to monitor cases, make sure that key things are being done, even in the midst of this, being done by video conferencing, testimony being taken by video conferencing, cases being prepared by everyone cooperating, and then the court staying involved, and then ordering the parties to go and try to resolve the case. The courts have the power to do that, and we think that if we can get the courts to set up a system, they will be able to make sure that they're not overwhelmed when we can go back and start again. They won't be overwhelmed with a wave of cases that haven't been resolved. So that's one of the main things we're trying to do.
In the criminal world, we have a saying that time always favors the defense. And the defense of a case, in your case, the people who are accused of having injured somebody, and their insurance companies, more specifically, really benefit from delay, do they not?
Well, unfortunately, the simple fact is that if there's delay, something may change that will help the insurance company. It's rarely anything that's going to help the plaintiff. For instance, the plaintiff may die. The brain-damaged child may have a problem and die, and then that case is gone. The mother who, you know, may not be able to take care of the child anymore, and something else will have to be done. Now, that's not every insurance company. Some of them are very sensible about trying to resolve cases, but many of them just say, no, we're going to wait until we have to. There's an old saying, and that is that you don't really often get a serious response from the defense until their feet are in the fire. The fire in civil litigation is the jury trial.
And, of course, the pressure is off right now because civil cases are pretty much continued for the foreseeable future, and even our criminal cases are being delayed for nobody actually knows how long. This is your legal rights. We remind you that we are encouraging you to call in tonight with your comments and with your experiences with the coronavirus. If you just want to talk to somebody, call in and let us know how this is impacting you. Our number, if you're calling inside the Bay Area, is 415-841-4134. Outside the Bay Area, 866-798-8255. Jim, let me just change the subject for a little while and take a little bit different angle. I have to say, I got an email advertisement a couple of days ago that reminds me why people sometimes don't like lawyers. And the title of this thing was, it was advertising a seminar, and it said, "Learn how your law practice can profit from the coronavirus." In some ways, is this an opportunity for the legal profession?
That's kind of stunning. I can't imagine what in the world they would be suggesting could be profitable for the law practice. Most of the law practices on both sides of the fence are just like other small businesses. We were all going very strongly a month ago. We're now at home. All of our employees are at home, and we're wondering how in the world we're going to survive. Even well-positioned firms are having a very difficult time. I can't imagine that there's any profit to be made in this crisis that is affecting America like nothing has ever affected it before. No, I think that's kind of crazy. I mean, the defense lawyers that I deal with every day that are very, very fine lawyers that represent their clients beautifully and this is all they do, they have to bill by the hour to pay their employees, to keep their businesses running. If the cases aren't being processed, if there aren't trials, if there aren't things happening, they're not going to be able to pay their employees. They're not going to be able to keep their doors open. And it's the same on the plaintiff side. If the cases can't resolve, this is like any business. There's nobody is gaining anything from this out of the virus except, you know, possibly Amazon is certainly having a lot of deliveries.
That's for sure. We look for the package on our door almost every morning. We have Benjamin on the phone from San Francisco. Benjamin, what's going on? Benjamin, you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, what's up?
Oh, hi. I was just calling. I was just listening to the show, which
uh-huh.
I'm a fan of.
Beg
pardon?
You're on the show with us now.
Oh, great. Well, I was just calling in because I'm actually a court reporter in San Francisco. And we've, you know, for the last several weeks, we've been in our community, you know, discussing this and ways to, you know, make depositions and hearings and things possible. I've had some experience doing remote depositions and remote hearings before the pandemic hit, but there obviously seems to be a lot of need for it now. There's a lot of discussion about it, but I haven't really seen them rolling in. I and pretty much everyone I've talked to has more or less seen our calendars dry up. And I was wondering you guys' thoughts on that. I know that the governor suspended certain sections of the Code of Civil Procedure to allow for the use of technology and, you know, the witness, like a party deponent and the deposition officer not being in the same room and stuff like that. But do you think it's just simply the uncertainty surrounding trial dates or things like that? Because it kind of struck me, about 3 weeks ago, I figured we'd be pretty busy because my assumption was that, you know, the same, like the courts are already backed up. It's already hard to schedule depositions. And that hasn't been the case, so I was just wondering what your thoughts were about that.
Well, good question. I'll ask Jim since he's on the civil side. I know that we're now doing remote depositions, electronic depositions, and so on. Does that work as well as the in-person deposition where you face the opponent right across the table?
Well, we've all done remote depositions. In a case where, in a situation where the witness is maybe not a totally a key witness and they're across the country and it's to everybody's advantage economically to do it remotely, we've all done that and it works very well. it can be just fine. But I have to say, I mean, maybe it's just the fact that I've been doing this for many decades. There is nothing as good to me as a trial lawyer as seeing the person I'm deposing, the person I'm questioning, I'm cross-examining across the table. I don't get the same feel remotely in a video. I don't get the same kind of an interaction. And so I think that more and more is becoming a way of life in our business, and this is certainly accelerating that, but I don't think it's nearly as good. I don't think that it's as good as up close and personal. And then, of course, when you get to the issue of how you do a trial and doing that remotely, that's a whole different thing that really concerns me.
Yeah, and we're learning tonight that there's really no substitute for face-to-face communication. Technology has its issues. We have, I think, Hill in the East Bay on the line. Hill, are you there?
Yeah, hello?
Hello?
Yeah, can I state my question?
Go for it. You're on the air.
Yeah, listen, I'm talking about indemnity for public officials. In the course of their duty, they cause mortality. Are they indemnified from prosecution for criminal negligence?
Well, you know, it's really hard to do that, but do you have a question for any of us?
Yeah, you didn't hear me?
Yeah, I heard you. What's your question?
You want me to repeat it?
I heard a statement. I didn't hear a question, Hill.
Okay. I'm talking about indemnity for a public official in the course of his duty produces mortality in the community. Is he indemnified from being charged with criminal negligence?
Oh, yeah. I understand your question now. Yeah, the answer, it's not indemnity, it's immunity. And public officials, prosecutors, judges, police officers have pretty broad immunity for what they do, as long as they don't, you know, exceed the authority of their office.
Or violate.
Okay. Does that answer the question?
Right.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Okay, well, thanks for calling, Hill. Jim, back with you. You know, I've said on TV and radio a number of times that I think a lot of the conflicts between nations are going to be over environmental issues in the future. I'm wondering, should we sue China?
Well, no, I don't think we should sue China, although I have seen that there are certain people that are raising their voices and saying that there should be consequences for China. But this is, I mean, that's a very deep political issue. No, I don't think we should sue China, and I don't think that China itself, I mean, it's a cultural issue. If this came out of animals, and that's what we sort of understand might have happened, that's been a part of the culture, many cultures, for millennia. And that's not going to probably change. That is not the country's fault. It's the culture. How do you sue a culture? I think that we have to, we just simply have to, as a society and as a country, we have to be better at looking ahead and preparing for things like this. And then I think we won't have to sue them.
Okay, well, I certainly hope so. I think we've got Lee on the phone from San Francisco. Lee, what's going on? Lee, are you with us? Well, I think we might have lost Lee. Jim, in the last few minutes here, you know, we mentioned your best-selling novel, Acts of Omission. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are staying at home and looking to curl up with a good novel. Could you tell us a little bit about the background of Acts of Omission?
Sure. It's a legal thriller, and it's based in San Francisco. It's about San Francisco. It's based in the 80s, and it's loosely a highly fictionalized version of a case that I tried back in the 80s. It's inspired by real events. But of course it's the fun, got all the fun things that a novel should have to make it worth reading and make it fun to. But the most important thing to me in writing the book was to find a handle to get out there and write something that people could read and get a sense of authentically what goes on in a lawsuit. How do lawyers get involved in them? How do they make their decisions? How do you prepare a case for trial? What kind of risks do lawyers have on both sides in trial? What happens in a trial and why? And unfortunately, I love to read legal thrillers, but I don't very often read any that are actually authentic and realistic about the actual process of preparing a case and trying it. And it's to give an idea of what that's really like, and to have some fun in the process, because it's got romance, it's got betrayal, it's got risk, it's got danger, all the stuff that you'd hope to find in a novel.
Well, you know, it sounds great. It's gotten terrific reviews, and it touches on one of my pet peeves, which is that people don't understand how hard lawyers work to bring a case to trial. On TV, you see the client walk in the door, there's a commercial, and when you come back, the lawyers are in court arguing, and people think that's all we do, is just walk into court and open our mouths and say whatever comes out. But that's just not it. It's a lot of work and a lot of drama, and the great drama and the hard work goes on long, long, long before any of us get into court.
It can be fun, and it can be have a lot of drama also, but be still be realistic. Exactly,
All right, Jim. It's been great talking to you tonight, despite the technological issues. Do you have any advice in our last 60 seconds or so for the people out there who may be wondering what they do to deal with the legal system in this crisis?
Well, I think what I would have to say to them is that we should all hope that we can get through this, and that the system that we have, that really is the most admired in the world, will still be the same system that we had before. I'm afraid there's a concern that it might not be. But I think that everybody, the lawyers out there, the clients out there, the people that are not yet clients but might become clients, the people who might become jurors, all need to pull together to understand that we need to keep this system together and keep it functioning properly, and all work together with each other. This is a time that our state, our Bay Area, our country needs to pull together and find ways to be positive, find ways to make something better out of this incredible crisis that has tested everybody in so many different ways.
Great words from one of America's top lawyers. Thank you all for joining us. This has been Your Legal Rights, and we'll see you next week.